Hello and welcome back for another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Erin Glace.
Erin lives on the East Coast. She is an author and a physical therapist.
That's right. Erin is joining us today to talk about physical therapy and how it can help with pelvic health issues before and after pregnancy. Hi, Erin.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I am a big advocate of getting the word out for pelvic health and more specifically these days dealing with women before and after pregnancy and things that they can do to proactively help themselves and find appropriate care. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for taking the time.
Yes.
Erin, I've read that you specialize in treating pelvic pain and avoiding dysfunction in patients, and your training is very impressive. In 2014, you received your Pelvic Rehabilitation Practitioner certification, and this certification recognizes the advanced set of skills necessary to treat your patients. You've also taken postgraduate continuing education courses related to pelvic floor dysfunction and pelvic pain syndromes for both men and women. It seems like this topic is absolutely vital to living a full and healthy life, but it feels to me like it's kind of a taboo topic, and people don't talk about it enough.
It sounds very, very specialized part of PT. Erin, how long have you been involved in this aspect of physical therapy, and what actually led you to pursue a career in this specialty?
Well, it is a very, very specialized segment of PT, and in fact, many of my patients come in on that first visit and are completely befuddled as to why they were referred to physical therapy for any of their bowel, bladder, sexual dysfunction type of issues. And it is a taboo topic. Thank you so much, Jean Marie, for saying that, because it is, and we don't talk about it enough. And so therefore, people suffer. And honestly, that's what got me into it. When I graduated from PT school many years ago, my dream was pretty much to do pediatric physical therapy. Mm-hmm. I started seeing some women way back then, 25 years ago, and it was amazing the results that we had, and amazing to me how many women suffer in silence. And so I would have to say it was my patients that really led me to kind of step into this unknown and very specialized territory.
Well, that's great. The fact that you had the foresight to listen to your patients, I mean, that's wonderful. And then to change into that just so that you could help more people. I'm kind of curious, why would a woman who's pregnant or one who's recently had a baby need physical therapy? What goes on there?
Isn't that interesting? Because when we think about a woman and the changes in her body during pregnancy, so, you know, your uterus, you gain, 25, 30 pounds over the course of 9 months. Your abdominal muscles are stretched sometimes to their maximum capacity. Our uterus grows. And then, you know, and this is, and not to be make light of it, but this is what I say to patients all the time. It's like, you know, and then you kind of push a bowling ball out of your body, or you have major surgery to remove said bowling ball. And obviously, I'm just thinking of the size.
Right.
But the amount of injury that women sustain from pregnancy and childbirth. And now, you know, we're strong. Women are strong. We often bounce back without, you know, with little to none. But you know, we know as a medical community how many women suffer from pelvic floor dysfunction or other issues that we can trace back to pregnancy. If you look at the statistics, 10% of women from ages 20 to 39 years old have some type of pelvic floor dysfunction. When you're 40 to 59, we're moving up to 27 to 30%. Almost 40% ages 60 to 79, and almost half of women 80 and older.
Wow.
So what that says to me is that, you know, we know that a lot of these symptoms are related or more correlated with women who've had children on multiple childbirth. Mm-hmm. So why don't we step in early and perhaps diminish those numbers rather than kind of having this perception that, well, you know, we've always had babies. So, mm-hmm. you know, we should just bounce back after the 6 weeks. I kind of posit the position or have the position that if, you know, you had an injury to your knee that was the same substantial injury as some women get during pregnancy and childbirth, you would clearly be in rehab.
Right.
And we would recognize that that soft tissue and those muscles needed time to fully recover and that you might need some guidance in return to activity. And I think that our medical community is looking more and more and more at the fact that we do need to do more for moms.
Okay. And what symptoms would a person have that would cause them to need physical therapy after childbirth?
So what I think we want to look at for a woman who's had a baby or is pregnant is, one, are they experiencing maybe pain that is higher than the average level? And that's kind of a hard measure, isn't it? Because my pain perception might be different than your pain perception.
Right.
But certainly when we look at a woman who's pregnant and having pain that might be limiting her activities of daily living or making it very uncomfortable, then certainly looking at how that woman is moving and what we can do, just like any other type of back or pelvic pain, to help that woman not have that pain. Because unfortunately, pain can then create more guarding and more dysfunction the longer that it goes on, especially something that we can do something about. So clearly pain, any type of loss of bladder or bowel control, I think it's very important, and sometimes that means leaking, and sometimes it just means I have this strong urgency or increased frequency of urination, or I have to really rush to the bathroom to, you know, when I have an urge to have a bowel movement. So those types of things, any type of pelvic pressure that seems, you know, uncomfortable, those types of things would clearly indicate a need to look further and get some care.
Okay. And is there a way to determine, you know, before your pregnancy, if someone might be prone to having complications after birth?
You know, that's a good question. And I am not aware of any research that has definitively outlined anything like that.
Okay.
And we are looking at things, but nothing yet is kind of pointing in a picture that says, okay, prior to even pregnancy, we really need to look at you. Except perhaps a history of previous back pain.
Okay.
So a history of previous back pain, I would say that's somebody who might want to especially kind of look into what can be done. What I am doing, what I've kind of stepped out and am trying to get started and have had some really good, very successful workshops where we're taking women who are in any stage of their pregnancy journey. And even after having, you know, I say all the time, you can have a 10-month-old or a 10-year-old, and you still might have problems from postpartum. And just getting together groups of women and providing education about their bodies, how their bodies work, what their pelvic floor is, what their pelvic floor does, how to kind of regain in a safe way abdominal muscle control, not necessarily trying to get women to bounce back, so to speak, but to, in a safe and effective way, rehabilitate the abdominal and pelvic regions, because I think education is the way to prevent. So that's my goal. That's kind of my passion these days, is education in that manner.
And what is the program called that you're working with?
It's called Mommy Care PT.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Erin, I have heard of urinary leakage, and when I had my children, which was eons ago, it was considered an expected part of childbirth, and it was also expected that older men and women would have incontinence or leakage. Is that still the case?
You know, it's... I think, well, pregnancy is one of the biggest risk factors for urinary incontinence. And unfortunately, when we talk about it, it kind of goes back to Jean Marie talking about it. It's a taboo topic. And it's an expected part of either getting older or having had a baby or things of that nature. And I think that's just us not talking about it enough. It is common. It is more common, how about that, after having had a baby to experience urinary leakage or urinary incontinence. But it's never normal. And I think that's where when we open the dialogue, when we start talking about these types of things, then people are more willing to seek out help and recognize that, hey, I don't really have to live this way. When you talk about a woman who's leaking, who might not return to a fitness program because of that leaking,
sure,
or might seclude herself more, it's, you know, the leaking in and of itself is uncomfortable, but it also has many, many other factors that affect their health. That it kind of flows into the rest of their life, whether it's mental health issues, like, oh my goodness, this is so embarrassing, to I can't exercise anymore. And how much does that affect a woman's health, not to be able to get out and do what she loves, for perhaps the mental health aspect of it, but also physical health. So yes, unfortunately, it is common that women will say, oh, it's just a part of aging or a part of having children. But I strongly discourage us from continuing that type of dialogue, I guess.
Okay.
You know, you mentioned men, and I will say, even though I do treat men as well, and men can have very similar problems to women. They do have a pelvic floor. The common term for pelvic floor exercises is called a Kegel.
Mm-hmm.
And so and that's often associated with women. But
right.
When I have men in my office and we start talking about doing things, they say, oh, isn't that the woman exercise? And I say, oh, no. Men have pelvic floors too. And unfortunately, just as women can have issues, men can also have issues, whether it's bladder control issues, bowel control issues, or unfortunately, sometimes pelvic pain. Pelvic pain in men is a big one. I just have to slide this in because we're educating the community that a lot of times men who have repeated episodes of prostatitis, and I'm kind of putting that in, you know, hashtag prostatitis,
okay,
not hashtag prostatitis, quotes, whatever, prostatitis, mm-hmm, actually can be a pelvic floor dysfunction. So I'd encourage them to seek care from a pelvic floor physical therapist as well.
Okay.
Sorry, that's a side note.
No, that's great to know.
Yeah, most definitely. I wish I would have listened a little harder.
Yeah.
As soon as you start talking about men, my ears perked up a bit. Sorry.
Okay. Erin, what are some of the treatments available for these conditions?
So when we talk about urinary or bowel or any type of issues like that, it's going to be assessing pelvic floor function, just very similarly, and I use the example all the time. If we're going to rehab your knee, we're going to take a look at how's that knee, how are the quadriceps muscles or the hamstring muscles working around that knee. But we also have to look up and down the chain. So if you have a knee injury, I need to look at your ankle and your hip. So with pelvic floor dysfunction, we have to look at the pelvic floor muscles, and we have to say, are these muscles strong enough? Are they overly tight, which happens a lot? So women who say, oh, I've tried Kegels and it doesn't work, well, it's a little more complex than that, because sometimes it's more a matter of women learning to release muscles than it is just strengthen muscles. But we also have to look above and below that chain. Sometimes diaphragmatic breathing, or the way that you breathe, can actually play a role in pelvic floor dysfunction. And so we look at strengthening, we look at total body, kind of how you're moving, movement patterns, breathing patterns, and rebuilding normal functional movement.
Is it different between somebody that had a C-section and someone that had a natural childbirth?
Well, certainly. Both, in some cases, could need assistance. And again, I kind of go back to what I alluded to earlier, is that I think we should be proactive in treatment mm-hmm. and recognize that there has been injury to the body with pregnancy and childbirth. So I would like women to be very well educated how to care for themselves, whether it's a C-section or a vaginal birth. So certainly with a C-section, we would need to consider how the tissue is healing, what's happened with the abdominal muscle control. I will see women in my office sometimes who, in their C-section, you know, they may have had their baby 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, even their babies are grown up and they mm-hmm. still have discomfort and tenderness across the C-section scar. So we have to recognize that that discomfort and tenderness and guarding will create possibly dysfunction in the abdominal muscles. Mm-hmm. Because it's right there. So, and again, that's one of those things like, well, you know, I had a C-section, so I kind of expected that. And no, we need to talk about it more. We need to say it shouldn't be expected that your C-section scar continues to be painful. Women who've had vaginal births, you know, sometimes it will be different. We'll need to kind of assess those muscles and see if there's tenderness or if there's any scarring. Clearly, women who have maybe pain with sexual activity, intercourse after having a baby, that's not normal. Clearly, it can be sore and tender for a short time period after a vaginal birth. But it should not persist, and it should pretty rapidly get better. Mm-hmm. So those types of things. But yes, so we would look at, you know, what the specific complaints for the patient are and really treat that. Again, hopefully with providing more education, we'll have women be able to do some self-care that may prevent some issues, but then also know what's not normal, whether it's C-section or a vaginal birth, so that then they can seek out care and not be embarrassed.
Okay. Sure. I wasn't thinking about this before, but then Ron brought up men. If a man has a large girth, you know, like maybe too much around the middle, will it cause the same type of problems as a woman carrying that bowling ball as far as the pelvic floor muscles?
that's a good question. And, you know, in terms of studies looking at like a person's BMI in relationship to pelvic floor dysfunction, most of those studies have been related to women. So as far as men, I would have to say, I'm not sure that we could correlate the two, just because of women, it's such a rapid, and it's not really just an adipose tissue or a fat tissue. It's really kind of called organs that are growing, uterus and all of that. And then of course the childbirth. Mm-hmm. aspect of it. But, you know, men, I think one thing that I see a lot of men for is if they've had prostatectomies for prostate cancer, okay. and that can create problems with men with bladder control and erectile dysfunction. So those are two symptoms that would be, you know, somewhat similar to women postpartum. And these are the guys that often I say, hey, we're gonna get you doing some of these pelvic floor exercises. And they say, oh, those Kegel muscles, those aren't those women muscles? Mm-hmm. They say, well, nope, men have them as well.
Okay.
Yes.
And Erin, have you found that people are diagnosed pretty quickly if they have a pelvic floor issue? Or is it something that usually is ignored for years? I mean, you were saying like some people 5 years out of having a C-section are having discomfort and, you know, they think that that's typical and they may not seek care for it. Does it make it harder to treat the longer you wait?
In answer to your first question, are they diagnosed pretty quickly? I'm hopeful that more recently, yes, people are getting diagnosed with pelvic floor dysfunction more rapidly. Traditionally, no. And I would mm-hmm. say that there are still a lot of people, unfortunately, medical providers that don't really understand how much we can do and how much we can help mm-hmm. Women and men with pelvic floor dysfunction. And I'll give you an example for that.
Okay.
So even thinking of a woman that I've worked with within the last couple of months, who young, beautiful woman who had pain with intercourse, really never was able to actually have intercourse, mm-hmm. penetrative intercourse, because she had such severe pain called vaginismus. You know, unfortunately, she saw multiple practitioners and said, this is an issue. She got married, unfortunately was going through a divorce at the time that I saw her, and had never been able to consummate her marriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we worked together, and, you know, within that, we're probably 3 months, she's fully able to have an enjoyable relation.
Well, that's great.
Right. So, yes, Jean Marie, they are. It is safe. Unfortunately, oftentimes do have to seek extra care. And there's some really good research studies and that look at how we don't ask these questions as healthcare providers, and that, you know, oftentimes women also will not ask about certain things like bladder control, because they kind of have this kind of, you know, idea that's propagated from generation to generation. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just have to deal with this because I had a baby,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really want to change that thought. It's like, no, you don't just have to deal with this because you had a baby, whether it's bladder, bowel, pain, any of these issues, there, we can help these women in a lot of ways.
Erin, question regarding that. Are there a lot of specialists that actually know about this? And the reason I'm asking is a lot of times people don't ask because, you know, when they do, a lot of times their general practitioner or somebody will say, well, it's just a part of childbirth, or, you know, as you get older, things happen. But the information you're giving us now is fantastic. But I do know that a lot of women are like, well, it's expected with age that their doctors and specialists don't know a great deal about this.
Even the TV ads are telling us that it's typical with age. You know, get one of these pads, you'll be fine. You can make it to the next door.
Right. Yeah, gotta love the media, right?
Right.
Yeah. Ron, you're completely correct. Is exactly those two things that you say. Primary care providers sometimes do not understand that there is care out there. And so I think that we are moving forward with that. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology recently released some new guidelines that are, you know, making it, we need to look more, kind of laying out guidelines stating that we need to be watching these women more closely for a multitude of reasons, not just the pelvic floor dysfunction or these other dysfunctions, but postpartum depression and things like that. So there's a lot of kind of literature about the fourth trimester, where we really want to focus in on the moms as well as the babies, mm-hmm. postpartum, and looking at that, what we call the fourth trimester, that, you know, 3 months after childbirth, where we could, you know, really kind of step in and make some positive changes. And again, that's where I think education comes into play. And I really, I hope that as we start this dialogue, amongst like doing podcasts, and I'm doing my best in my local region to kind of put out some information and providing some workshops. And one of the things that I always say is like, let's start talking about this. Mm-hmm. Let's start talking. Let's not kind of make this an embarrassing thing. We shouldn't be, you know, we talk to our neighbors about our rotator cuff injury, but, you know, if they say, well, how are you doing? You're not likely to say, well, I have some pelvic floor dysfunction.
Right.
Don't say that. But yet, when we think about pelvic floor dysfunction, what is it? It's mm-hmm. muscles and nerves and soft tissue that can be rehabbed just like a shoulder or just like a knee or a hip. But because of what the function of those muscles are, it's, you know, sex and urinary and bowel. So we just don't want to talk about it. And we just need to change that. We need to say, hey, it's okay to talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. Just like it's okay to talk about postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, you know, our mamas are suffering. And we send them the baby at six, you know, and say, hey, pat them on their head, say, do your Kegels, have fun, you know.
Right. Yeah, you have to treat the whole package.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
I was just curious, besides the exercises that you were talking about, what other therapy could you use for pelvic floor dysfunction if the Kegels don't work? And are there any other treatments that are available? Like, I'm just thinking like injections or anything like that, or?
Yes, there are. And I think that's where physical therapists can be kind of a first and second line, working with physicians who, you know, so if you, so it depends if we're going to talk about just incontinence. Okay, mm-hmm. So incontinence, we would do a lot of education about, like, well, what are you drinking? And believe it or not, Lita, there are ways that you can help protect your pelvic floor. For instance, using better bowel movement patterns, defecation, functional anatomy, like using a squatty potty actually help. I know, and that also helps protect your pelvic floor. Constipation plays a role in bladder control. So there's a lot of education that comes into play. Again, kind of, I'm pushing that, aren't I, the education part, because you can learn some things to protect your pelvic floor so that you can hopefully prevent and then treat those issues. So it is the exercises, but it also is kind of looking at the total body. So looking at breathing patterns, looking at other physical activity. Kegels are a big part of it. Kegels, we know research proves that Kegels in and of themselves work for stress incontinence when they're done correctly. So that's education. And then beyond that, so if you've done this total package of pelvic good pelvic health care and you're still having problems with urinary incontinence, then you absolutely can go to physician level of care with injections, or there are some surgical procedures for stress incontinence, overactive bladder. There are some medications that some people may choose to use, especially, you know, depending on the level of problem. And then there is also, we can use some forms of electrical stimulation, actually.
Erin, we live in the wonderful world of technology. Are there any online support groups or anything out there to help raise awareness for any of these conditions? You know,
there are. There's a group called Your Pelvic Floor Muscles. There are many, many. If you get on Facebook and you just type in pelvic floor dysfunction, urinary incontinence, you're going to find a lot of information out there. I think it's giving people the okay to seek that help. And once they do, you're going to see, oh, yes, there's a lot of resources and support groups.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Erin. We had the chance to speak with someone you know recently, Kathy Regan Young, and I understand that the two of you co-authored a book. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Oh, yes, Kathy Young. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, my dear friend Kathy, she's such a phenomenal patient advocate. She has the website FUMS Now. She has multiple sclerosis and, like I said, is a wonderful patient advocate. And she and I have, you know, she's a dear, dear friend, and she and I have talked a lot about bowel and bladder issues with multiple sclerosis. And so she got the idea that we should write a book together. And we did, and I loved it, had such a good time. We've gotten some really good feedback about the book. It's on her website, FUMS Now. It's Bowel and Bladder Issues and Multiple Sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And the title's a little longer, but you can look at the FUMS Now website and see that. And it's great. It's some really good basic information about pelvic floor function and how to specifically work with the pelvic floor if you have multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
A lot of it is pretty general information, though, to be quite honest. So it can be applicable to many different conditions.
Okay. And we picked up our copy on Amazon, but it's great to know that you can go right to her website and find it there.
Oh, yeah, yes. And it is on Amazon as well. Yeah.
Erin, have you thought at all about possibly publishing a pamphlet that you would put in OBGYN offices for aftercare?
I get referrals from a lot of OBGYNs right now. I am working with a urology practice where I maintain my clinic hours. And my goal in the next year is to get in with the OBGYN offices and do these workshops where we just do mom education. And I have, over the last 6 months, I've done some just beta testing. I've done some free workshops and solicited a lot of feedback from women attending those. And recently I've started doing some, you know, paid workshops where I have yoga studios that I work with. And I'm also working with some women who just want to create their own workshop and gathering their groups of friends together. And the one feedback that I got with my beta testing was price point. And that, you know, people wanted this information. And I think delivering it in a live setting is very valuable just because of the conversation. So doing small group workshops where we have, you know, 5 to 10 people. I did one workshop. We had like 30 women, which is fabulous. Ideally, like 5 to 10. It just keeps the price point really, really affordable. And we just share a lot of information. Again, my goal is to kind of help women proactively treat their pelvic floor dysfunction or proactively prevent pelvic floor dysfunction, and then treat what they can and then know how to reach out for help if they need it. Hopefully 2020, I would love to be in some doctor's offices, very similar to Lamaze classes, but just a few classes focused in on moms. And their health.
That sounds great.
Good. Well, Erin, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. How can our listeners find out more about you and your work? Do you have a website, social media accounts that you'd like to share, and we can post it on our website?
I would love that. Thank you. Yes, I have. Right now, I just have a Facebook and an Instagram, and they're both Mommy Care PT.
Okay. That's great.
Well, thank you, Erin. Thank you so much for your time this morning. You're very, very informative. Thank you for taking time out of your morning to spend it with us.
Yes, we appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And like I said, it's kind of my mission in life to educate about these issues to prevent unnecessary suffering.
Yeah, I know. We're going to talk about it in our next family party. Because
everybody on the floor.
Well, I don't know about that, but you know, everyone just kind of accepts it in our family, and it's good to know that there is help out there.
Right. We could get rid of those. We each have pamphlets on where the bathrooms are that are closest. We can get rid of those.
Right. Then. Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health care provider with any questions that you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new health care regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.